This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to Resource Center, your toolkit to manage and grow your business. My name is Audrey Raj. We've got a pretty interesting show for you today, one that will get you thinking and questioning the future of work and the workforce of the future. But before we get started, you have to promise me to hang in there and listen to the speaker we're featuring today with an open mind. Now, when the tech community heard that Ivanka Trump was going to be on stage at CES 2020, they didn't take the news too well. There was plenty of backlash online before her appearance, partly because of how polarizing her father is as POTUS, but also because many industry figures viewed the White House advisor as privileged and lacked the tech qualifications to be speaking at one of the biggest tech conferences in the world. Despite the initial backlash, though, many in the tech-heavy crowd at CES were left impressed, or at least with mixed feelings after hearing her thoughts on the future of work. Our very own Jeff Sandhu was in that crowd during Ivanka's keynote in Vegas, and he hooked me up with a recording of the session so you too could be left with some food for thought from her speech. Here it is. Give it a listen.
Well, welcome to CES. We're so honored to have you.
It's great to be here. Hi, everyone.
You know, there's been a lot of focus on this, and I think it's terrific because you are focusing on such an important subject. But I want to start a little bit in the beginning. You are advisor to the president. What does that mean, and how did you select what your focus is?
Well, I've been predominantly focused on pro-growth policies, whether it be the enabling environment that encourages companies to invest, grow, and flourish in the United States. Many of you are illustrative of the boom that is happening. Or it's the policies that build upon that foundational environment, tax cuts, deregulations, and ensure pathways for all Americans to be able to secure great paying careers in this booming economy. So that's really my foremost passion and focus, removing barriers and obstacles for people who want and can work to be able to provide for themselves and their families. And there really has never been a better time to be working in America than today. And there's never been more people working in America than today. 160 million Americans are working. Record low unemployment across every demographic. Amazingly, and this is a statistic that I think is so important. So, you know, it's well known that for the past 14 plus months, more job vacancies exist by almost actually a little over a million than unemployed Americans. But what's incredible is that over the past year, of all the people who have secured jobs in this economy, 73% of them were from the sidelines, not even on unemployment. They were totally outside of the workforce. They had been marginalized. And they're coming back into the workforce in part because of the work we're doing alongside academia and the many great employers who have committed to our shared goals of helping Americans secure the skills to be able to fill the job vacancies. But it's an amazing thing that's happening where because wages are up, because there's more economic opportunity, people are coming off the sidelines, they're going through these training programs, and they're securing the skills that enable them to compete in the long term.
And that's true, actually, in our industry, consumer technology, we have 2,000 plus American companies that are members, and 4 out of 5 of our executives are concerned and having challenges in filling the jobs they have today. So what is it that you are doing that is part of that?
It's one of the number one concerns we have from employers, and it's also a concern and potential impediment to growth happening on a state and local level. So when we had the governors join us at the White House last year, I gave the keynote address because the number one concern cited was lack of skilled workforce. But it isn't a lack of worker. There are 6.5 million unemployed Americans, but then there are countless that aren't included in that statistic because they've been marginalized and are outside of the workforce. So I love what's happening because it's forcing employers to get creative. We have the lowest percentage of unemployment for disabled Americans in the history of this country. The lowest percentage. So it's a very, very exciting time to be in the workforce. And you know, one of the things that I am really passionate about is the fact that there really is this blue-collar boom that is taking place in this country. If you look at where wages are rising the fastest, they're rising the fastest in the bottom quintile. They're rising the fastest for blue-collar workers. And technology is helping enhance and fuel productivity, but we're here obviously talking about the way jobs are evolving and changing. And to do the same job today in many industries outside of what's considered sort of a traditional quote-unquote technology industry, there is a technical application and a technical literacy that's required. So it's not only about training for the jobs of the future. People need to be thinking about investing in their current workforce so that they can enable those people to do their same job using different equipment tomorrow.
You know, when we met at the White House in March, I was talking to you about all the great benefits of technology. I was talking about the book we had published last year, which described it fully about artificial intelligence, self-driving cars, robotics. And you turned to me and you said, this is all great, but what about the people who are the factory workers and the drivers and the clerks who are concerned that they may be left behind by this technology generation? My empathy is probably very low, and I know I have to work on it, but the truth is that we have to focus on the fact that there is discomfort with change, and my career is focused on change, but this is a big change, and we've always thought that the number of new jobs is going to exceed the jobs that are lost. And that may be true in this case, we don't know. But when you talk about drivers and self-driving cars and some of the other things, it's a challenge. And you started talking about all the different things you're doing. So I'd like to go through some of the things that the White House and the administration are doing. Could you walk us through some of those?
Well, I think if this conversation resonated with you, it's because your empathy isn't low. So first and foremost, but you know, this president campaigned on lifting all Americans, but really focused on the forgotten men and women of this country. You just mentioned self-driving cars. Well, in the majority of the states in this country, truck driving is the single largest occupation. So while I share your view that innovation, A, it can't be bridled, right? It never works. Any country who's tried to impede innovation, they fail to do so over the long run, and they hurt themselves in the short and the medium run. And I also believe that innovation is a net job producer. You know, jobs will be created in industries that don't even exist today because of innovation. Innovation will enable productivity innovation will allow for more inclusive growth. Disabled Americans, we were talking about before, will be able to use robotic arms to do tasks they wouldn't have otherwise been able to do. So I'm a big believer in innovation and the positive impact that productivity has on an economy and fighting for American dominance in the industries of the future. With that said, it is our responsibility as we think about this country and the health of all Americans to be anticipating where there will be disruption, whether it's long-term or short-term, and coming up with a plan to help transition those people. So when I hear employers would come to me and they'd say, we need more skilled workers, we need more skilled workers, and then I'd read about them laying off segments of their workforce because they were investing in productivity, and not having spent the time when they had known 3 years prior they'd be making that investment and upgrading those systems, not taking the time to take those workers and reskill them and retrain them into their job vacancies, well, I have very little sympathy for that. So I have been fighting, and this president has been fighting, on raising awareness within the private sector through our Pledge to America's Workers, where we have gotten over 400 companies to commit to over 14 million training and reskilling opportunities for their current workforce. So that's upskilling, reskilling, enhanced education opportunities, and for the future workforce, that's apprenticeships, et cetera. There are many people in this audience who have signed our pledge. Part of this idea of the pledge was to galvanize and catalyze private sector interests. It's not enough to come to us and say, thank you for cutting taxes to ensure that we're competitive in a global marketplace and that we're able to compete. Thank you for creating the enabling environment by being thoughtful about regulation and eliminating redundant regulation that doesn't achieve its desired goals. But we need more workers and we're not willing to make the investment. What we know is most of the federal government training programs don't work. What does work is when the private sector teams with a community college, a technical school, a university, a high school, and develops a curriculum that is taught to students, and then ultimately they hire those students that are coming out. There's a great program that NAM just took over in Kentucky that Toyota, one of the members who signed the pledge, who's up there, developed to train people in advanced manufacturing. There are great, great innovations happening. So we wanted to catalyze that, but that isn't enough. We're also looking at the federal government at what else we can do. So we created the National Council for the American Worker, comprised of 14 federal agencies that I chair, where we are developing for the first time ever a national workforce strategy that really combines the effort of HHS, which is focused on early childhood. So Head Start, for example, is part of HHS, with the Department of Education, with the National Science Foundation, with the Department of Labor. There have to be connectivity and synergy between the efforts that are happening across the federal government. So we'll be issuing this National Workforce Strategy, which will be a blueprint to job training, reskilling, and demand-driven education in the coming months. We also have committed unprecedented record amounts of funding towards apprenticeships, because our country has not invested in a robust way in generating an apprentice pipeline outside of the skills trade. So the construction industry has a very strong culture that celebrates and embraces apprenticeship as a form of education, but few other industries do. So we've worked with the Department of Labor and we've put out $300 million of funding to encourage education and apprenticeships to be formed in industries such as cybersecurity, in tech support, in healthcare, industries that should have apprenticeship ecosystems and don't. So there's a lot we're doing.
So we are trying to model that behavior. On this stage, exactly a year ago, Ginni Rometty, serves on one of your councils, chairman and CEO of IBM, announced that we have a partnership with the Consumer Technology Association, that IBM's apprenticeship coalition, IBM's apprenticeship programming, would be extended throughout our industry. And we've already had 40 companies sign up and say they want to do that, because you're right, apprenticeships for the skilled trades are very common, and that's accepted. But the fact is, as I think Jamie Dimon just said this week, it's not about degrees anymore, it's about skills.
That's right.
It's time for a break. More from Ivanka Trump at CES 2020 after these quick messages. BFM 89.9.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You are listening to Resource Center. I'm Audrey Raj. We're about to go back to CES 2020, which happened in Vegas earlier this month, and Ivanka Trump's keynote session on the future of work.
I think one of the challenges we have in this country is that there is a belief that has been ingrained in society that there's one path A, and that's four-year college. And while that is a great path for many Americans, most Americans don't take that path, and it is not the right path for all Americans. So we want to celebrate the other pathways that exist, whether it be apprenticeships, whether it be a credential. Many of the industries, tech support, cybersecurity jobs, not all of them require a bachelor's degree. So thinking, and you had mentioned, Gary, the importance of defining work based on skills rather than credentials is incredibly important and requires a major shift in our thinking. So one of the things we've asked this advisory board to do and task them with, and we'll be unveiling it in the weeks ahead, is to create a massive national ad campaign. So we're working with the Ad Council, and we're going to launch this massive campaign which celebrates these other pathways that don't require four-year college. We don't want to denigrate that. We have the greatest university ecosystem in the world, and we're proud of that. But we need people to know that there are other pathways, because you know what? Not only for the student, who may be good with their hands, but don't know where that can take them or where that leads them. But if you're a mid to late career worker who needs to learn a new skill in order to maintain relevancy in the modern economy, guess what? You're not going back to four-year college. So why not make Pell Grants available to high-quality, shorter-term programming? We're fighting to do that. We've just launched a pilot with the Department of Education, and we're fighting to have legislation passed to make Pell Grants available also to prisoners, those who are eligible and likely to be released. But if you're a mid to late career worker, it is likely today that you may need to be reskilled multiple times in your career, and you're not going to go back to college to do it. So we need to open the aperture and raise awareness around the many options that exist, and the industries are very excited to do that. You look at manufacturing, and I view most manufacturing as high-tech manufacturing these days. In America, manufacturing is high-tech manufacturing. Actually, if you talk to a lot of manufacturers, they get very upset with Silicon Valley because they say, hey, we're the original high-tech. We've been displaced. But that is not the perception in many young people's mind or their parents or their guidance counselors. So just disrupting the stereotypes around what a manufacturing job looks like today, because guess what? There are 500,000 vacant jobs in manufacturing that are well-paid and don't require a college degree. So we're going to be launching a year-long, hopefully beyond that, national ad campaign to try and fill those 7+ million vacant jobs that exist in America today with American workers who are unemployed or on the sidelines or who are looking to learn a new skill. We're also very excited. We've tasked this board with creating an interoperable learning record, and we're bringing all the stakeholders to the table and saying, you know what? We need to harness technology and data to enable people to have their information in their iPhone, just like we've enabled the health industry. Now we have the interoperable health records, and it's been one of the early successes of this administration, really opening up that data and making it available so that people have control of their own information. But why can't you have your high school degree verified and in your phone, so an employer, A, doesn't need to call your high school and find out, did you in fact graduate? So it takes the friction out of the process. It's verified, it's there, but it's all right there. But also on the job skills that were learned. Maybe you learned CPR as a lifeguard. Maybe you learned or got upskilled working on a factory floor and acquired a new skill. All of that should be cataloged and tracked and accessible and available and empowering the individual, as opposed to locked up and siloed in the HR department of a company where if you leave, it stays with them as opposed to travels with you. So we're bringing together all the major players and saying, how can we help develop and innovate off big government data and create this interoperable learning record? And some genius at marketing in this audience will give it a better name. Resume of the future, whatever we want to call it, because interoperable learning record is not well branded. But how can we empower the individual to have all of the skills they've acquired over their lifetime available, accessible? And oh, by the way, wouldn't it be great if there was a job vacancy in your zip code that matched the skill you had if it got pushed to you? This is not hard to do. It just hasn't been done. So we're quite excited about taking this on.
So there's four different strategies, and that was one?
Yes. That was one. The branding campaign is one to sort of expose people to the different viable pathways to achieving a family-sustaining career. Another working group Al Kelly is leading this one with Johnny Taylor, the head of SHRM. Ginny Rometty is and Tim Cook are leading the working group on
SHRM is
the
Society for Human Resources Management.
Yes.
You're really part of Washington now. You use acronyms.
Yes, sorry, yes. It was important to get, you know, all the different HR organizations to help us address the third one, which is if we really want to think about hiring by skill as opposed to by, you know, credential or school degree, which may or may not be relevant. You know, amazingly, 4 out of 10 Americans with a college degree working today are working in jobs that don't require one. So breaking it down based on the skills as opposed to the degree is really important. So we asked this group to come together and think about HR practices and ways we can disrupt it and think about hiring in a new way and really disseminate that information. So not only how companies think about investing in workforce training in terms of their balance sheets, you know, it's the first line item that's cut. But it's also, even in, you know, this booming economy where everyone is pointing to this program or that program, very few CEOs can tell you how much they actually spend on workforce development per worker. They can point to a program with 20 people in it that they've just stood up, but they really can't tell you what type of investment they're making in the skills and talents of their current and future workforce. They can with healthcare benefits to $1. But we need to make people internalize this as a core obligation of an employer. Increasingly, there is a drive within corporations, you see it with BRT, to think about what is their social impact. And I would say the most important social impact you should be opining on is the health and the prosperity and the commitment you have to your own family, your own workforce. So we're pushing employers to do that. Thinking about HR also through the lens of what degrees are actually required for what jobs. I was talking to Ginny, and they were having a lot of challenges recruiting people to fill vacant cybersecurity jobs at IBM. And she said when they went back and looked at the application to fill those jobs, the HR department had put in a requirement for a bachelor's degree, which was not a requirement for many of the cyber jobs that they were looking to fill, so they changed that policy. So what policies are creating these artificial barriers? Also, second chance hiring. Ban the box. So we're going to come out with a whole list of policies that we want companies and HR departments around the country and globe to examine and really be introspective about so that they can ensure that, for everyone, so that they can ensure that they're not inadvertently screening out qualified applicants for jobs that they currently have vacant today.
Well, Jamie Dimon actually also said this week that 3/4 of their jobs that are open now or do not require a college degree.
Correct.
But the government itself is the largest purchaser of technology, and one of the complaints I've heard is that when you're doing IT project for the government, they require you have all these people with all these degrees. So if you come up through an apprenticeship program based on skills, you are ineligible to work on a government project. And that's one of the things the government itself can look at.
We're changing a lot of that, including second chance hiring. And so we are looking at all of those programs internally, the office of OMB through their management department, because you're right. Government procurement is... We could have a whole panel on government procurement and the challenges there and also some of the challenges to ensuring that we're hiring people based on qualifying skills as opposed to credentials.
That was White House advisor Ivanka Trump and CEO of the Consumer Tech Association, Gary Shapiro, on stage during the keynote session at CES 2020 in Las Vegas. Now, if you missed out on any part of this show, the podcast will be available on our website, bfm.my, the BFM app, and all other platforms where you enjoy your podcast fix. Just search for Resource Center. Next week on Resource Center, our friends from Open Minds Resources will be back to regale us with digital marketing tales of 2020 and beyond. So stay tuned for that. Till next week, though, my name is Audrey Raj, signing off for Resource Center, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.